Welcome to Headlines. This week, our guest will be Rav Shlomo Gottesman, the editor of Yeshurun, and the Rav of Shari Tefila in Passaic, New Jersey. And the topic will be a very contemporary, current topic because of Lag BaOmer: Skulis, Kabbalah, Chayratel, Mekubalim, etc. How do we look at them as, you know, Bnei Torah, Hasidim, Yeshivalite, etc.? Are they for real? Should we be following them? In the following weeks, we will have some very interesting guests. We will have Rabbi Eitan Feiner of the White Shul. We will have Rabbi Yair Hoffman, who will be speaking about priorities in tzedakah. There are so many people knocking on the doors constantly. Well, who comes first? We will have the Dayan of Baltimore, the Rav of the Star K, Rabbi Moshe Heinemann. He will be speaking about the kosher switch. Is it really kosher? A very controversial topic, and for that we got arguably one of the biggest dayanim in America to discuss this. You can listen to us on WMCA 570 or on WMCA.com or at the Nachum Segal Network at NachumSegal.com or in Passaic or Edison on the Edison Network. So we're doing a little bit of a contest this week that we've never done before, sort of a lottery. We're listened to online and on many different jurisdictions, and we're trying to figure out where is, are more people listening to us online or are more people listening to us on the internet. So we will give, we'll make a drawing this week, and whoever sends us an email to info, that's I-N-F-O, at headlinesbook.com, that's info at headlinesbook.com, and they say where they listen to us. Which network is it? Online, is it? Is it which particular network that we will do? And there will be three winners, and each one will win a $100 gift certificate to their favorite local Sfarim store. So all you have to do is send in an email to info at headlinesbook.com and say, "I listen to you on WMCA.com or WMCA 570 or Nachum Segal Network or etc." One of the different networks that carries us, and you will be eligible for this drawing. So let's start with guest. Welcome, Rabbi Gottesman. Talking about a fascinating topic, we've all had the occasion to be, visited by Mekubalim or being asked to donate for Skulis. Now it's around, Lag BaOmer. So we've had people ask us to donate for Chayratel or for Shidduchim. We're constantly bombarded, with those of us who have children in Shidduchim or for Parnas, etc. And we've all wanted to know, how real are they? Is it halacha? Is it based upon Chazal? Or where does it come from? And Rabbi Gottesman is an expert in this, so it's really an honor to have him with us. Welcome, Rabbi Gottesman.
Shalom aleichem.
So, Rabbi Gottesman,
I'm an expert, I'll do my best.
So let's start with the beginning, just a brief history. When you learn Gemara, the word Kabbalah really doesn't seem to be there. Where does it start, and halachically, where does Kabbalah make its first entry into our lives of Shomrei Torah Mitzvahs?
Okay, so the word Kabbalah is a broad generic term used differently by different people. In our current vernacular, it has come to mean Kabbalah Sarizal Mevusis of Sefer Hazair. Sefer Hazair was Nizgala, as we all know, by Rav Moshe de Leon in the late Rishonim period. There, prior to that, there were schools of Kabbalah, such as Kabbalah of the Ramban in Catalonia. There was Kabbalah of Rabbeinu Yehuda Chassid v'Chugoi in Ashkenaz. But when the word Kabbalah is used currently, it has usually come to mean Kabbalah as espoused by the Arizal, based on the Sefer Hazair. Sefer Hazair, obviously, it's a long, complicated discussion to Enkan Mekaimai on the controversy concerning the Izgalus of the Sefer Hazair. By for Bnei Torah, Sefer Hazair, as has been codified in the Paiskim, was written by Rav Shimon ben Yochai, and has a Toikef, which, as you mentioned, has become paramount in Halacha Yom Yom, meaning that there are scores of places in Shulchan Aruch Chaim where Kabbalah has implications, halacha l'maisa, on what we do on a daily basis. The Magen Avraham quotes the Sefer HaZayar either directly or indirectly through the Shalach HaKadosh and other Sifrei of the great Mekubalim scores of times. And as I said, this is Negeya Lamaisa. So Kabbalah generally means for us on an operating basis, the insertion of the Psukim of the Sefer HaZayar into Halacha. It obviously means other things, which we'll talk about, such as Kabbalah Ma'asit, as it's called, which is a much more complex, complicated, and issue fraught with perhaps danger. But let's start with your question, which is, how does Kabbalah affect us? And the answer is, there are numerous examples of Shulchan Aruch Chaim. I can give you a few. I don't think we'll have time to go into any of them in detail. We're talking about Hanochas, Shalom Shal Reish Shal Yad, how many brachais. We're talking about Inyanim of Hanochas Shalom HaChalamayit. Talking about issues about Hilchais Tefillah. And again, if a person comes late to Tefillah, how he should engage in skipping or not. There are quite a few important halachais. This is just in the first chelik of Aruch Chaim, first Mishmar Aleph, which are based on issues where there may be machloikasin between the Zohar and the Talmud Bavli. There are rules, as they are Kloli Hapsak, on almost everything which is negated to Dalet Chelik Shulchan Aruch, which tell us how to deal with these things.
Obviously, now, Rabbi, talk about Kabbalah Ma'asit. I think that would interest more, we're talking about more the sort of, quote-unquote, the mysterious, the mysterium of Kabbalah.
Fair enough. And then I certainly am not an expert on the mysteries of Kabbalah. There are people out there who legitimately are. They are not the problem. I assume, whoever they are, the world in general would be able to identify them. I think the problem are those people who hold themselves out to be and are treading into areas which are problematical. Now, we have to be very clear here. I have no standing to discuss, obviously, anybody specific, and arguably I have no standing to discuss any specific type of Hanhagais. What I'm telling you is what is the shita of many Gedel Yisrael Bizmanenu, a leading exponent and a very articulate exponent of this is Rav Yaakov Hillel. I suggest you get him on your show, who legitimately is a vast erudite yadan in Kabbalah, has published numerous sfarim, is a Talmud Chacham of world class order, and he has taken it upon himself to write about this. And if I may be forgiven a little bit of a plug, in the aforementioned dialogue issue 4, Rabbi Hillel published a wide-ranging article which speaks to the problem of Kabbalah Ma'asit as it is practiced today by people who are not ro'u l'kach. We're not talking about those few people in the Torah who are. And the problem is, ipso facto, if you are holding yourself out to be an expert, and if you are advertising your expertise, let alone using it kardum lach barbay as a means to achieve economic gain, that cannot be the real way that Baalei Kabbalah act. Because Baalei Kabbalah, those few people in a generation, and the further we get away from the Rizal, I can't imagine like anything else, the less stature we have in any field, certainly in this. So those handful of people in a generation who know what Kabbalah is all about, their raison d'etre would be not to advertise themselves, and not to take out full-page color spreads in some of our wonderful leading publications, telling about their trips to New York, where they can do X, Y, Z.
So listen to this question, Rabbi Gottesman. Interesting. I had an email, and I'm going to read an email from a girl. Her name is Rachi, and she's from Lakewood. She says, "I'm an older single girl. I replied to an ad in the New York, in the Jewish press, a New York-based publication. I'm going to expose the Jewish press, from a mekubel from Eretz Yisrael. I went to him, and I expressed that I am single. I'm older, and he said I should marry the next boy I'm read, and that is my zivug from Sheshes Yimei Bereshis."
What's the end of the story, Rav David?
What do I do?
There's no end of the story. It's a question.
Yeah.
So the aforementioned Rav Hillel has a sefer called Tamim Tia in Hashem Elokecha.
It's actually sitting right in front of me right now, the sefer.
Okay, Tamim Tia was translated to English. Yep. At the end of the sefer, he has the following story with the Gav Hadar, Marin Balki Elias Yaakov. Rav Hillel was a young Rav, probably in his early 30s, a couple, an engaged couple, came to him. They were a week away from being married. And they came to him and said, great consternation. They had gone to see, for whatever reason, clear, one of these mikubalim, and you find there a kodesh, who looked at them and either read their palms or did something else and told them that they are not for each other. Their zivug was not ordained in the shamayim, and they should immediately break the engagement. Rav Hillel hears this, and he says, he panics, says, well, you know, I can't paskin this shayla to go up to Lishkas HaGadus. Gets into a cab, takes him to Bnei Brak, to Maran HaStipler. Stipler was someone who was ready to cite Yamov, didn't hear perfectly well, and was known rarely to ever lose his temper. He had a glass wall in his room, so his children and mishpacha can keep an eye on him. This couple goes in with Rav Hillel. With 30 seconds, the entire mishpacha heard the stipler screaming, which is highly unusual for him. And the stipler told them, chas v'shalom, to listen to this. They should immediately go back and prepare for the wedding, and he promises them all the bucks in the world, etc. Kachav, and of course, the end of the story, you can imagine that everything worked out well. So I'm not going to pass on a shayla with this young lady, not my place, and I'm not her rav. She should consult her rav. But to take a life-changing step on the basis of someone who, I don't know what it is, but someone who is taking upon himself to make this kind of psak, in my opinion, is dubious. But she should admit that Lakewood is a year, Malaya Chacham Seifrin, plenty of chasher rabbanim, let her ask a shayla.
Okay, so let's move forward. What about the Geirul Hagra? There are many people who use the Geirul Hagra for just about everything.
Okay, I'm not sure there are many people who use it for everything, so let's talk about Kufayin Tes. What you refer to, Rav David, what you're referring to, is a time-honored mechanism which actually preceded the Gra. There is some evidence that it was in Kisver B'chaim Vital, and other of the Mekubolim from the Spartish side of the coin. Be as it may, it has become to be identified with a Goyin.
I think the reason it's called the Geirul Hagra, in my ignorant opinion, is the Goyin had a particular way of doing it. The Geirul was done many years before that, but he had a particular mechanism how to go about it.
Okay, if your readership is interested, Rabbi Landau, in the Gaon HaChassam of Vilna, second Madura only, because it was omitted from the first time, as a chapter on the Geirul Hagra. I'll tell your listenership very quickly that there are stories, of course, that the Gedolei Chafetz Chaim did a Geirul Hagra, and other Gedolim in Litta did Geirul Hagras. The most interesting one is supposedly, allegedly, when Rav Aaron Cutler was deciding in the course of the throes of the terrible, terrible beginning of the Muhammad in 1940, where to go, whether to go to Israel or to America, allegedly he did a Geirul Hagra, and it fell out on the following pasuk, Lech,
across
Moshe Hamidbara, and therefore he decided this was a reference to Moshe Feinstein, and he went to America instead of going to Israel, which, of course, has changed the course of history. If someone with close ties to Lakewood, I don't have to be Mar Hamet. You understand what I'm saying. This story is, I think, apocryphal. I've tried to investigate it within the mishpacha. They had not heard it. Be that as it may, it is mikubal. It is true that Gedolei Yisrael have employed the technique. And the question is, L'chaira, for instance, give an example, Rabbi Levine, in 1948, a convoy of Israeli soldiers right after the beginning of Qumran Medina were ambushed, killed, and it took a while till they were able to get their gufais back. They were interred in mass graves. To make a long story short, Rabbi Levine, and this is documented, it's public record, used Gaira Lagra to identify which remains or which neherag in a public ceremony, and it's all documented, as I said. So Gedolei Yisrael have used this technique. The problem with this is, and Kuf Ayin Tess, the Mechaber begins.
You're not allowed to. You're not allowed to, Mechaber says.
Ain Shailon Bechaizim Kechav Malay Begarolis. It's not so simple. Kuf Ayin Tess, as you know, David, is a very complicated simon because it deals with a lot of ambiguous sugis. You know, unlike Teruvis, which is straightforward until you get to the second level, here we're dealing with abstruse concepts. So I'll give you an example, since you mentioned
the Rambam says
it's usher.
And the Ramon Arachaim is mashma that it's Yaisa Taiv, it's not a Nisagamar, by the way.
But you don't need the Ramon Arachaim. Let's do the Ramon right here. The Ramon says, Mshem Shenemar, Kamim Tia Im Hashem Alekecha. The Ramon seems to indicate that the aside of the Isser, even though there are eight Isurim, which are connected to the various forms of Nichush and Kishuf, here there's also an Isser Asay, which is Tamim Tia Im Hashem Alekecha. However, if you go a little bit further down, the Ramah in Dalit says, Bayis Tinik, Ve'isha the Mechaber says, Afal Pishayin Yishuch Nichush Yesh Simen, that's a complicated piece of Gemara, which I don't have time to go into now. But the Ramah says, Chayin Mutter Lein Latinik Psoikli Tisukayich, and Yesh Ayin Ram Da'adim Mutter Lasloi Simen. The Ramah seems to indicate that under certain circumstances, it in fact is Mutter. And the question is, the Ramah seems to be Mechaber himself. Here he says, following up on the Mechaber, you're not allowed to use a gyro. So how can one use a gyro? And later he says, under certain circumstances, so the answer to the gyro explained Paiskim, contemporary Paiskim is, and the reason why Gedolei Yisrael, starting with the Goyin, did in fact allow it and use it, is because based on the second Ramah, the Seikli Pisukaya, which is a mimer three times a Shas, which is the most famous one probably, is the one in the Sugya of Kansa Bar Kansa, where the Tinnik was asked for his Pasuk, what he was learning that day. Psykli Tisukayach is the basis for the Heter for Ger Lagra. What does that mean? And the Pais can explain that because all Chachma is embedded in the Torah, by using the Sukkim, which, as you mentioned earlier, the Goyim had a unique way of doing it. But using the Psukim, the Torah, you are not straying into Isurei of Michush or of Kshafim. You are using the secrets in the Torah to solve your question, and that is a form of unlocking Sisrei Torah. That's the Heter in a nutshell. So those Gedolei HaDor who have used it, they had the ability to unlock Sisrei Torah. I'm somewhat dubious, to be frank, if every single person here that you mentioned, many people use it all the time. I'm dubious if it's something which should be used all the time. Even Gedolei HaDor used it in one-shot deals. Baruch Ber used it, for instance, when he had to decide during World War One which way to send the yeshiva. At the end of the day, they divided Talmudim into two. One was sent one way, the other way. But whatever it was used for life-altering decisions. It wasn't used whether, you know, you should buy this stock or which subway line you should use that day.
So let me ask you, it's like Lag B'Omer time. Something like Chai Ratl, like, how do we, I mean, you're obviously a Lakewood Talmud. How do you, with a healthy dose of Shulchan Aruch and, you know, Litvisha, based upon, you know, grounded in halacha and in Rishonim, how do you look at something like Chai Ratl?
Okay, so let's broaden that a little bit to all these type of segulas. All, and let me make this crystal clear, is at province Chas V'Shalom, and I think you'd agree from your perspective to be Matl Doifi in any type of Minig Yisrael, whether it's called a Minig or a segula. Almost everyone, now of course there are Minhage Ta'us, as you know, that's called Vahin and Alacha, but come on, every single segula, at least until recent years, that we all generally know about, has some occur somewhere.
Yeah, but I just want to also point out that the Maril writes that Minig also makes Oisius Gehenim.
Okay, that's a requires an entire interview on its own. But let me try to answer your question, since obviously it is a good and topical one. I like to tell Shaimei Likhi that this is the time of the year, which is Segula season, starting with Shlis L'Challah on Mitzvei Pesach, and through Etzilas Rabbeinu Ashalah on Erev Chodesh Sivan. These, you know, the basically the period of Sfiras Ha'Omer, and there must be something hidden there. Every single Segula, bar a few, has a Mekor explicated, starting obviously in Chazal, which are schools of a different category and order, and there are rules about that. The Refuyas in Talmud and the Refuyas in the Segulas in Chazal have been filtered through the Rishonim and the Paiskim. The other ones, what we call the later Segulas, generally someone Chashuv has said this at some point of time. Chai Reitel, a relatively recent one. If you look in the back of the Talmud and Hagim, he has a Kuntres has Segulas, probably 50 Segulas, and he talks about many of the things and what their Mekoros are. The problem is not the existence of these Segulas, because, as I mentioned, for instance, you mentioned Chai Reitel. Look, this is something which is on Gedalia Hasidus. So no one is going to sit down and argue with Chashuv Admirim, who promulgated this, even though this is a relatively recent one. I'm not an expert in the Mechkar of the source of Segulas, but the earliest place I was able to find this was one of the originator, Einikok, sometime in the late 19th century, sent a letter to the Hanhala of the Kevah Rashbi and said, I heard there is such a segula. I'm sending you 100 zlotys. I hope it works. If it doesn't work, okay. And this has become the makar for Chai Reitel.
But respectfully, Rabbi Gottesman, can I ask you a question? Something like Shlissel Challah, to me, is very different than Chai Reitel. Shlissel Challah is not so much a segula, but it's like the simonym of Rosh Hashanah by night. In other words, we leave the cheirus of Pesach, and we think we're done with the concept of geula of cheirus. So the concept of the Shlissel Challah is we finished with the matzah. So the first Shabbos afterwards, we say, you know what? Pesach is not the conclusion of our journey of cheirus, but it's the mafteach. It's supposed to open the door to the search to cheirus. And through the Yemei of Sfira, our journey towards Kabbalah Satayra, a person is supposed to search through the mem tes yamim, its memches ways of the avoidus of the memches dvarim shatayra niknes mem. It's supposed to the search for enlightenment towards our individual Kabbalah Satayra. The Pesach wasn't the end, but it's the beginning. So it's opening a door. So it's sort of like the simen of Rosh Hashanah. To say that something, that Chai Ratl is a segula, to me, it sounds like Darkei HaEmori. It's exactly what the Shulchan Aruch is referring to.
Okay.
One is supposed to be Ma'ir you, one is supposed to be Ma'ir you, and one is a potion.
And explicated brilliantly. The problem is that every single segula has, by now, a pretty rich literature to back it up, whether going back to its mekayer or, you know, retroactively. So, Shlosh Chala, when I was growing up, and it was still kind of relatively unknown, was understood not in the beautiful amkistic explanation you gave it, but it was understood as a segula for parnasa, which is fine. Everybody needs parnasa, including the two of us. So we're looking always for those type of segulas, and that's a good thing. It's based on his first exponent of it was Reb Pinchas Mekaretz, when the Chashuvei Talmidei Habesht, and then, as you probably know, it was probably made in the first one by the Ayv Yisrael after up. Nope. Who are we to argue with that? And all the wonderful things that you said about the Cheres of Pesach and all that may be true, maybe the Makar of it, but as you indicated, every segula is a fine line between its use, and here's the problem, if I may say. Like everything else in our world, it just depends on how you apply what you've learned. Meaning, we have a unpleasant habit in the Torah world, on certain segments of the Torah world, of taking tefillin and making them to the ikar. There are two problems with that. First of all, you elevate the tefillin to the ikar, and then, by definition, the ikar gets lost. If the traditional use of Shlosh Chala was segulas for parnasa, there are many segulas of parnasa, but there are, I'll give you three fantastic segulas of parnasa, which I promise you are guaranteed to work. I can't tell you how, and I can't tell you what. I'll tell you one segula which comes directly from the Rabbi Shlomo through the Navi Malachi. It's called the Bechanunin Amizais. Pay your maestres, which has been translated into giving tzedakah, and I'm sure you know this personally, and your business activities are going to be matzliach, a lot more baduk u'menusa than shlosh chala. You want another segula for parnasa? Open up the Sefer Chinuch to mitzvah Taf Lamed, which is the mitzvah of Berachas HaMazon, and see how he beautifully explicates the importance of this mitzvah, which has been further sharpened later by Gedei Le'elam, to tell you to bench slowly with Kavana, carefully, surefire segula for Parnassa. Those are the things that is obviously the most biggest surefire segula for Parnassa is to say the bracha of Baruch Oleinu every single day, three times a day, with Kavana. The point is...
A fourth one, so the third one, it's tefillah, and the fourth one, let's just mention tongue-in-cheek, is to actually work.
You know, that goes into the big category of people would like easy way outs, but they don't want to do the hard things. As you say, working, you know, or getting yourself a means to a parnasa is actually, because of the chet of Adnabarishain, a divinal thing. And people don't want to do that. Much easier to take a key and take it into your challah, which a mutual friend of ours, Rabbi Nachman Nack, mentioned to me yesterday, is a segula for parnasa, perhaps, because he knows the story of someone who baked their key into a challah, and they were locked out of their house, and it was a segula for the locksmith to have to drill their lock open. I am not in any way chash v'sholim, impugning any min Yisrael, including shlosh challah. Full disclosure, I'm not my name, my Rebbetzin from doing it too. Why not?
So how do you divine between Shlosh Chala and the girl who emailed in saying that the guy said it's his Zivig Mishesh Yishimabrish?
Okay.
How do you decide? Why would the...
Excellent question. First of all, you need someone who knows Kufayin Tesh, a very complicated simon, goes to the Torah in the Shulchan Aruch, number one. But this is what I would call a fifth Shulchan Aruch. There's so much tzaris out there. There are so many desperate people with needs for Yeshuas in all the major categories that it's very easy to prey on people. This young girl from Lakewood, I don't know the statistics, that's a subject, I'm sure, of another one of your shows, but there are, unfortunately, hundreds and thousands of young ladies looking for shidduchim under difficult circumstances. So they are obviously prey to people who are offering easy fixes. The fixes that Gedolei Yisrael have offered over the centuries, the traditional ones, are hard. You have to daven, and you have to do the things, digduk for mitzvahs, for men, increasing limud haTorah, for men and women, increasing, above all, the koyach haTfilah. These things are under the rubric of no pain, no gain. Hard things to do. Much simpler to call 1-800-SEGULA, give them your credit card for $18 and up, and have them daven for you. A new phenomenon has arisen in the last 10 years, I would say. Outsourcing all, not just mitzvah shebegufai, but I'm talking about mitzvah shebelev, it's really the ultimate mitzvah, avodah shebelev. Is it possible to outsource a tefillah to somebody else? Show me one example anywhere in Chazal or any reputable source that this is possible. Of course, you can go to bracha, to another gadol, which is already all over Chazal and all throughout Jewish history. Cannot outsource the koyach haTfilah, and that remains number one segula. This young lady has fallen into a trap which is really reprehensible. You want to read about it? As I said, read Rabbi Hillel's sharp attack against Kabbalah Ma'asit.
So let me extend this. The girl did not ask me this, but how would you respond if the girl was asked to in an ad, and I haven't read the papers, but I'm sure there is such an ad that says, do you need a shidduch? Send $180 for Chai Ruttel. And there's some girl someplace who's earning $360 a week and comes home with and says, I'm going to give 50% of my paycheck to Chai Ruttel because I need a shidduch. Is she doing the right or the wrong thing?
I think, Rav, that's a question to which Amit Tarlafan was pushed to me. If you're asking me, would I allow one of my daughters to do that? The answer is no.
Would I
encourage them to give tzedakah to a reputable place and to be marba in tefillah and chesed and other things that are mitzvah da'iraisa? Yes. I can't speak to a specific case because I don't know the pratim, but I think we both agree it sounds dubious. Let me just mention one more thing about the koyach haTfilah, which I think is very important people don't realize. Let's talk about the sad situation of people who are not well, chaylim, which at the end of the day is the single biggest gairim to people seeking yeshuas, understandably enough. So Chazal deal with this quite explicitly in Babashra Kuf Tez Zayin Amud Aleph. Gemara says, a well-known Gemara, Darsha Pinchas Parchama, you go to a chacham, and he is supposed to be the spowl for you, and the pasuk cites a pasuk, Gemara cites a pasuk in Mishlei. As an addendum to this Gemara, Rabbeinu Baal Nimuki Yosef adds, and this is reasonably well known, he adds, Min Zebet Sarfas, there's a minig in France, which is the heart of the Yishuv Balei HaTosfos, Kol Mish Yesh L'Chayle, anybody who Rachman Latzlan has a chayle in his home, Mevakesh Pnei HaRav HaTosfos Yeshiva, he asks a bracha from the Rav who is Tosfos Yeshiva, Sheyavarach HaYisai, that he should give him a bracha. This is a reasonably well-known Nebuki Yosef. The Pashat Pshat is that the Koyach HaTorah of someone who is Machzik Torah, and at the same time, Lame Made Torah, Taisis Yeshiva, has the ability to be Payel Yeshua is from the voice of this person. However, not so well known is a Me'iri, Nadat Gemara. And the Me'iri says something startling. The Me'iri says, L'aylam ye'libay shal adam batuach shahat fila kishi kitnashet kitikonach mevatelos of gzera. A person should always be batuach. If a tefillah is done properly, it can be mevatel as a gezerah. Now listen to the language here. Umiyesh yitzar, someone who has an unfortunate circumstance, a chayle b'teich beisai, or he is someone sick, rachmano atzlan in his home, a echad mimini hatzarais, he has unmarried children, yelech etol chacham, and now listen to the next phrase, v'yilmoid heimenu darkei hatfilais, You should go to a chacham who will teach you darkei hatzilos, and he should be mevakesh rachman. And here he has an entirely different shot than the other rishonim in this member of the Gemara. What the Miri says is, you go to the chacham, not that he should be mispalel for you, because even though he's a much greater tzaddik, at the end of the day, it's your schusim that are going to be determinant b'shamayim.
But that you should learn for yourself. Amazing Miri.
You should learn for yourself.
Astonishing Miri, yeah. It's astonishing.
What does this mean, David, since you're faster than the audience? So give me a second to explain. What this means is, what the Miri is telling you is that, again, no pain, no gain. You can't just go to a chacham and assume he's going to take care of you. You're going there to learn how to daven. And I've seen this myself with Gedel Yisrael Bizmanenu Anu. Whenever you go to Rav Steinman or to Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Shlita, you ask them for something. If you have some shaychus to them, they're always careful to ask for something back. I was at a prime a little while ago, and I came with a list of Rachmanos on Chaylim, my kill and otherwise, and he said, okay, brachos, but I want you to organize a shir in Hilchos Shemitah, meaning it's not free. And I've seen this quite a few times over the years, and I was once explained Rav Steinman, and the answer, the reason for this is because the kayach of tefillah that somebody can be prayer yeshuis for you is different, according to the Nuki Yosef, if you have a Rav Talmud relationship. Therefore, Bekitzer, if you do something and you've accepted to do something good, then he is mispal for you as your Rebbe. You just walk in off the street and stand in line. Of course, at that level, they can be prayer yeshuis, but it's a different construct.
Or alternatively, according to the Meiri, it's because you've earned it. You've actually changed.
You've earned it.
So, let me just conclude. I would just like to say that another pshat in that Gemara is possibly the Maral says, a beautiful pshat in Avis. He says, "Batal ritzayin chalof neretzayne, kishay deyivatal ritzayin acherim neretzayne." He says that by everybody in the world, he says, desire and what you wish for and what you get, there's a big step. We all know we desire for so many things, and what we actually get, that's the ocean of all our effort. He says there's only by one where desire and effort are the same, and that is by the Rabbeinu Shalom, by God, what he desires, what he wishes, right? Hutziva vayehi, what he desires and what he wishes are one. So he says that the chacham, the tzaddik, his ratzin and the kaviyachals, he's always batal ritzayin lefnei ritzayin acherim. His ratzin is always batal to the ratzin of the Rabbeinu Shalom. His desire is the ratzin of kaviyachal. So he says, where those two ritzayinis meet, over there is no chasm, there is no difference. And over there, it could be niskayim. So it's not like the Miri second shot, but it's still. But I'd like to go back to, tell me if I could sum up, because I would like to conclude with what you're saying. Tell me if I'm grasping the gravamen of what you're saying. The Shulchan Aruch in Kuf Ayin Tes, it would seem that it's very tenuous as to whether all these schoolists, Kabbalists, whether they're even mutter Meikar Adin. And in some situations, they're clearly, they violate the concept of Tamim Tia Im Hashem Elokech, and they could be either an Issa D'Rais or an Issa D'Rabbanan, depending on the case. In certain other cases, they may be mutter. But certainly, even if they're mutter, for the most part, they're schoolists. They're sort of like get-out-of-jail-free cards, and they're sort of like, they're easy way outs. But the true way in everything is through avodah, it's through tefillah, it's through Torah, it's through ma'aseh mitzvahs. These are, I hate to use the word, but they're sort of a little bit like gimmicks. And you're saying that the real way is through ma'aseh mitzvahs and tefillah. And if somebody has a way, a shidduch, a trick of this, you know, there may be some trick, but usually in life tricks don't work. And the way to do it is through ma'aseh mitzvahs and tzedakah and tefillah, and to go through the tried and proven paths. And don't believe that somebody who flashes a makubal card is gonna, you know, it's like buying a lottery ticket. Very few people earn a living by buying lottery tickets. Is that sort of a fair way to sort of grasp what you're saying?
I would say that's a cogent summary. Obviously, not all schoolers stray into possibly Surah Tam Tiyam Hashem Lekecha, but if your point is that the Minusa and Baduk ways that Chazal and the Torah tell us are the ways to achieve better things in your life. Those are what need to take precedence. All these other things are kachais with tabachot. There are addendums. Some of them are okay. Some of them are clearly not okay. And some of them are in a gray area. But whatever they are, they should be viewed as secondary. They should be viewed as things which are tafel to the ikar. Ask a shayla if you need to, and be very careful with people who are looking to make money off you. Whenever, here's my tried and true rule, when there's a credit card picture on the bottom of the page, turn the page.
Well, that's the advice from, thank you, that's the wise advice of Rav Shlomo Gadisman, the Rav of the Kehillah of Shaarei Tefillah, the editor of the very famous Torah journal, Yeshurun. And I think that's quite a good answer to Rachi from Lakewood. We had many more questioners, but I thought hers was the most poignant question. Thank you very much for joining us, Rabbi Gadisman.
Thank you.
So this is really a very sensitive topic because many people do believe in skulas and Kabbalah, and the Shulchan Aruch is sort of opaque on it. So let me proffer my opinion on this really very sensitive matter, and I'd like to amplify one point that Rabbi Gadisman made that I agree with, regardless of whether, you know, and I think most people would agree with, regardless of whether we follow those who do follow Mukabala Madon. And that is as follows. Listen to the following email I got. A request for an answer from Rabbi Gadisman. I didn't get a chance to read all the questions. I have cancer. I consistently need blood transfusions. My insurance coverage does not cover all of it, and I am constantly looking around for money to cover. I went to a mekubal and asked for a bracha. He said if I give him $10,000, he will daven for me that I will be cured. I don't have the money. Should I raise it? So let me amplify what Rabbi Gadisman spoke about. And he spoke about mekubalim who come with brachas that come with a credit card attached to the bracha. And whereas I don't want to proffer opinion about the entire matter, let me give you a few thoughts and tell me whether you agree with me or not. What is an Adam Gadol by Klal Yisrael? What is a great person? So who is the first Gadol once we become a nation? Is Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, Moshe Rei Mehemna. What do we know? What do we know about Moshe the person before he becomes a Navi, a prophet? What do we know about him as an individual? What causes the Rabbeinu Shalom? What causes him to choose Moshe? There are only 9 psukim in the Torah that speak about Moshe before he becomes, you know, before he becomes a prophet. And what does it say? It says, "Vayehi b'yamim ahem." It was in those days, those very sad, bitter days, under the whip of Paro in slavery. "Vayigdal Moshe." He became 13 years old. "Vayetze el echav." He went among his brothers. "Vayar b'sav loisam." He saw their suffering. "Vayar ish mitzri maka ish ivri me'echav." He saw a mitzri smite a Jew. Now here's what's interesting. It starts off and it says, he went out among his brothers and he saw their suffering. Now remember, in those days, if you were an Egyptian prince and there was a fly in your wine, what did you do to the baker or to the vintner? You cut his head off. This is an Egyptian master baker or vintner. You cut the head off. The royalty, as right, they looked at the commoner as a speck of lint, of dirt. As a slave, did not even register as a human being. But what does he say about these slaves? He saw their pain. He saw their suffering. And what does he do? Vayifen kovacho vayitmaneo b'chel. He kills the oppressor. He puts his life at risk because he sees an oppressor, an evil, somebody taking advantage of another person. He puts his life at risk to appease somebody else's suffering, to ameliorate somebody else's suffering. This is the first view we see of Moshe, of somebody who would bring the Torah, who would bring the Decalogue, the Aseret HaDibros, to the entire world, who would bring morality to the universe. Now, what does it say on the second day? Vayetze b'yei mashini, and he sees two people quarreling, two Jews quarreling, and he says, evil one, to the one who's striking the other, why are you striking your brother? And what is it adding here? You would think maybe the first pasuk is saying, you know, it's nationalistic pride. It's an Egyptian striking a Jew. He's taking sides. But two Jews, okay. It's not nationalism. Everybody knows about nationalism when it's the United States against Iran. You know, everybody winds up. England against the Falkland Islands. The Mets against the... Everybody knows that. But two people of the same... No. He saw somebody oppressing another human being, two Jews, and he said the same thing. Russia, evil one, why are you striking your brother? This is the first glimpse we have of Moshe. And what does the Medrash say on Vayar b'Sivlosam? He saw their suffering. The Medrash says like this, he would walk among them, and he would see them carrying huge, you know, heavy bags of cement. And he would try to help them, and he would cry, and he would say, oh, I see your pain. I see how you're worn down, how you're broken. This is the Medrash Rabbah, the Medrash in Shmais, Shmais Rabbah Chav Zayin, 127. He says, he would see their suffering, and he said, I suffer with you. He says, when they died from their struggling, from their being beaten, he says, I wish I could die in your place. So you know what I say? This is what I say to Yossi, who says, should I give this quote-unquote Mekubal, the $10,000 that he needs for the blood transfusions. I say, if it was Moshe, he would have said, let me give my blood for you. You need blood transfusions? No, I don't want $10,000 from you. How can I come to Sloan Kettering on Sunday, take some of my blood for your blood transfusion? That's what Moshe Rabbeinu would have said. That is the concept of what is a great person. Let me share with you a story of the Chafetz Chaim that Rabbi Krohn brings in his Sefer. He says, there was a man, he lived in Poland, and he had a family, he had seven children, and when he was 30, he got very sick with a mysterious illness. So he went to Vienna, and all the doctors in Vienna couldn't cure him. And they said, we give you 6 months to live. And he got sicker and sicker. And he was going to leave over seven orphans. So he went home, and his wife, you know, they prayed and they davened, and his wife came to him. She said, you know, there's a very holy Jew, the Chafetz Chaim. He lives far away in Radin. Go plead with him, cry to him. Maybe he could help you. So this man took his last vestiges of energy, and he rented a little wagon, and he traveled for a week all the way to Radin. And he came to the abode, the holy little abode, the little shack that the Chafetz Chaim came into. And Chafetz Chaim then was in his 40s, but he was already famous as very pious and holy. And he knocked on his door, and he was studying, and he told the Chafetz Chaim his story. And the Chafetz Chaim sat there, wrapped in his talus, listening to this man say, I will leave seven orphans. Holy Chafetz Chaim, please help me. And he wept. And Chafetz Chaim wiped a tear from his eye, and he said, go home, I'll pray for you. I have one request. Don't tell anybody that you came to me and that I helped you. So the man went home, and miraculously, he started getting better. And 3 weeks later, he got up, and he started walking around, and it was considered a miracle. Well, around 30 years later, or 35 years later, he got sick again. His sister came down with the very same illness. So it seems it was some family illness. So his sister comes in to him, and she says, I remember you had this illness many decades ago, and you were miraculously cured. What happened? Tell me. And he remembered his vow to the Chafetz Chaim. And he said, I can't. I can't tell you. I promised. But you know how sisters could be in family. She got one sister to call, and then the other, and then the brother, and then she had the rabbi call, and then his wife yelled at him. Finally, after a few weeks of everybody, and his sister was rapidly declining, he said, I went to the Chafetz Chaim in Radin, the holy Chafetz Chaim, and he prayed for me, and I made a vow, and I got better. Well, something very strange happened. A few weeks later, the illness that had some 35 years before haunted this man came back, and he again got seriously ill and went into a serious state of decline. But this time he wasn't worried. He knew what he would do. he would go back to Radin. So this time he was already a well-to-do man. He had a big business. He rented a wagon and he went back to Radin. And now it's many years later, the Chafetz Chaim was in his late 80s, hunched over. And he knocks on the door and he comes into the same little shack and he sees the same holy man. And he says to the Chafetz Chaim, "Do you remember me? I was here 35 years ago and I was so sick. Well, I'm sick again. Could you do that thing again, whatever you did?" And the Chafetz Chaim looks at him and so sad, and he says, "You know, you came to me, it was a long time ago, and I was a younger man, and I was very moved. So I fasted for 40 days for you. I didn't eat. And every day I prayed for you." He said, "Now I'm an old man. I have no more strength to fast for 40 days for you. I'm sorry. I can't help you anymore." This is what a great person is. He didn't ask for money. He didn't ask, "What can you give me?" It was, "What can I do for you?" Just like Moshe. So let me finish with another story. Okay? It says like this. It says that Moshe, when he came down from the mountain, it says, "Umoisha la yada ki karan arpanav." When he came down from Har Sinai, his face shone. And everybody was afraid. It was like a beacons of light. In fact, because of that light, that's where the famous Michelangelo painting is, where, you know, it shows Moshe with horns, because karan arpanav, which means the light emanated and shone from his face, was mistranslated in the first King James Bible as Moshe had horns on his head, by an ignorant translator. So the Medrash asks, what does it mean? Why was his face glistening? Why was it shining? Why was light emanating from him? So it says, the Medrash says, the Alkut Shemayni in Kisisa in Remes Tav Zayin says, "Nishtayer bekolmos kema." There was little ink when he wrote the Torah. There was a little ink left over. "Vehaviroi al reishai," and he put it on his forehead. "Umisham nasa karnehayit," and that ink shone, caused the light to shine from his face. So the Baal HaTorim asks the question, you know, and basically, you know, when you paint your house, so you tell the painter, "I need 3 cans of white, I need 1 of green, 1 of blue, depending on your wife's taste, maybe 1 of red, yellow." And when he's finished, there's a half a can of this left, there's 1 of this, a third of a can. Now when Rabbeinu Shlomo, God says, write the Torah, he knows the exact amount of ink that's needed. So what does it mean that there was ink left in the pen, in the feather that Moshe wrote the Torah with? So there's different explanations. But I heard a fascinating explanation. It says that when Moshe wrote the Torah, originally, his name was supposed to be in Parshas Tetzaveh. But what happened? After the Jews were chayte with the Egel, what happened? Rabbeinu Shalom said to Moshe, "Achalim ve'esa ischal agai gadol," in Kisi Salamid Beis Yud, Rabbeinu Shalom says to Moshe, "They sinned, let me destroy them, and I'll make you, Moshe, to a agai gadol, into a great nation." And what does Moshe respond? Right? Moshe responds, "No, tisa chatasam, do not destroy them. Vim ayin, and if you don't agree, mecheni nami sifra chasher kasafta, erase me from the Torah. If you want to destroy them and make me the new nation, no, destroy, take me out of the Torah that you have written." So the Mefarshim say, where was it in Eskayim, erase me from the Torah? Moshe's name was taken out of the whole Parshas Tetzaveh. Comes out that all the times that Moshe's name was supposed to be in Parshas Tetzaveh, all that ink was left in the Kolmos. And what did Moshe do with that ink? He put it on his forehead. So I ask you, what does that mean? He had leftover ink and he put it on his forehead. What is that like? You know, you have kids, when you leave them at home and they have paint, what do they do with the paint? They run around the house and they smear the paint on the walls. Or they'll take and they'll smear it on the floor, on the walls, on paper. He had leftover ink. Because he said, "Mecheni nami sifra chasher kasafta," and he put it on his forehead, like it seems so childish. So I heard a beautiful pshat from my son-in-law, Rabbi Yada Goldwicht. He said an amazing pshat. He said that this ink represented Misha said, you want to destroy the Jews and make me into a big nation? No, 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 no. Destroy me first. The job of the leader is to say, I'm willing to die first. My job is to take care of my people. The captain dies first. So Misha was so proud. This Misha's shining moment was to be a caretaker. His proudest moment was when he was able to say, I'm willing to take the bullet for other people. I put my existence secondary to my charges, though who I am responsible for. And you know why he put the ink on his forehead? Because Misha is the first religious leader of the whole world, of all religions. And what is he setting an example? He's setting an example for all Gedolim, for all future Dairis. And he says, you know what you should be mispoyer with? He put it on his forehead. He said, your proudest moment should be when you say, Mecheni na misifrach asher kasafta, rather than when Kavyachal says, Eschalagai gadol, when you say, Ayin vim ayin mecheni na misifrach asher kasafta, your proudest moment is when you say, I want to take the bullet on behalf of my charges. That is my proudest moment. My shining moment is when I give, when I give of myself, when I'm willing to sacrifice of myself. And it's true, most people who give of themselves, who are able to do tivus, actually recognize that indeed that is their, you know, those are their best moments. I'll tell you a story I heard. The Haran Stipler, the great Haran Stipler, was once, there was a certain almana he used to go to, and he used to fear a tish there every Shabbos. And he used to eat a little bit, and the chassidim would come, and they would eat shrayim, like the derech chassidim. And she made a chalent, and he used to usually eat a little and give it out. One time he ate the chalent, and to his surprise, everybody's surprise, he didn't give it to chassidim. He said, bring me more. And he kept eating and eating. He ate an entire bowl that was supposed to be for 20 people or 15 people, and they couldn't believe it. Now, there was one chassid, a real rabid chassid. He said, I must have a little. So he went into the kitchen. There was a drop left in the pot. And he ate a little bit, and he almost fainted. It tasted so bad. What happened? Instead of putting in oil, she had put in some type of a cleaning liquid. She had mixed up two bottles. And he did not want to humiliate this woman. So he got sick eating some type of a spoiled food. Rather than, he took it on himself, rather than humiliate another person. It was Mecheni na misifra chasher. That is a gadol. And what does the Gemara say in Bab Mitzvah? Gadol v'saymech al shulchan acherim ikri katan. I want to conclude one more time by saying this week we have a contest. If you send us an email to info@headlinesbook.com and you tell us which station you are listening on, either one we're carried right now, we're in four countries, on four different stations, on four different networks. We will have three winners, and each winner will win a $100 gift certificate to their local Sfarim store. So if you say, are you listening on WMCA? Are you listening in Edison? Are you listening on the Nachum Segal Network? Are you listening in Israel? We're carried by an Israeli station. You send us info@headlinesbook.com. Yeah, and you will win $100. Give the top three. We will put it in a barrel. Three people will win that certificate. We will be having next week Rabbi Ethan Feiner of the Weichel. We will be having Rabbi Yair Hoffman, and then we will have Rabbi the Dayan of Baltimore. We'll be speaking about the kosher switch, Rabbi Moshe Heinemann. Thank you for listening to us here on Headlines Radio.